name is Chris Kosmidis. I'm an infectious diseases consultant at the National Aspergillosis Center in Manchester. Today we're going to discuss therapeutic drug monitoring for azole antifungals. So in order to be able to perform TDM effectively, you need to really know what are the reasons for it, why do we really need to do TDM, and also you need to be aware of the different TDM methods that are out there and what are the differences between them. After that, we're going to review the two main azoles for which we do TDM, which are itraconazole and voriconazole. So why do we need to do TDM? First of all, azoles are notorious for having a lot of drug interactions, and some of those interactions will affect their levels. The most relevant one, probably clinically, is use of proton pump inhibitors like omeprazole, which are known to reduce absorption of the itraconazole capsule, and this is actually quite a common interaction in real life. Another important interaction is the antimicrobial rifampicin, which is known to increase azole metabolism, resulting in actually in often undetectable levels of itraconazole, so you should never use rifampicin with itraconazole together, you will not achieve good itraconazole level. Like most drugs, you need to a certain compliance, especially when you use antifungals for a long time, for example, using itraconazole in allergic or chronic aspergillosis. You really want to make sure that compliance is not an issue, so a TDM can help you with that. In addition to that, some patients with severe disease, for example, brain aspergillosis, which you are treating with voriconazole, you really want to make sure that you are having good therapeutic levels. So that's another reason to do TDM in those patients. And finally, the azole antifungals really display some pharmacokinetic variability. There are different pharmacokinetics in children, in the elderly, and also in patients who are acutely ill in the intensive care unit. So this is where you really need to focus on TDM management. There's no need to check fluconazole levels because that's really a more predictable drug in terms of pharmacokinetics. It's very well absorbed orally. So we don't generally do fluconazole levels, although we do need to check itraconazole and voriconazole levels. Which TDM methods are out there? Bioassay is the most widely used. It's actually a cheap method and quite simple to perform. It has some drawbacks. For example, other antifungals that the patient has been on may interfere with the results of the test. And also, especially regarding itraconazole, it measures itraconazole combined with its metabolite, hydroxytraconazole, so it measures the combined activity of the two drugs and not just itraconazole itself. HPLC is also another widely available drug, which, again, it's relatively simple to perform, and the advantages are in that it can detect multiple drugs in one sample, and also you can measure itraconazole separately from its metabolite, so you will get different results with the HPLC and with the bioassay for itraconazole. Mass spectrometry is a more expensive test, so it's not widely used, but it's much more sensitive and specific. Moving on to discuss itraconazole. Itraconazole is available in an oral solution and in oral capsules. The oral solution is 30% more bioavailable, in that it is better absorbed. The capsules have to be taken with food and ideally an acidic beverage like cola in order to improve absorption. And just to mention again the scenario with a patient being on omeprazole, this will reduce the itraconazole absorption of the capsule, but it will not affect the absorption of the liquid. In contrast, the oral solution is better taken on an empty stomach, so that's the difference there. And steady state is achieved after 1 to 2 weeks of therapy. So you don't need to measure trough levels of itraconazole, you can measure random levels. That should be as good. And as I mentioned before, bioassay and HPLC measure different things. Bioassay measures both metabolites, and HPLC just measures itraconazole. So what evidence is out there to help us, to guide us with the recommendations for TDM monitoring? So the most abundant evidence we have is from the neutropenic population, where there has been a large meta-analysis of cases several years ago that showed that the itraconazole suspension is better at preventing invasive aspergillosis in those patients, in that it achieves better levels. And it was also shown that a trough level of less than 0.5 resulted in higher mortality in those patients, as it was not preventing aspergillosis. Some other data with fewer patients shows that itraconazole, when used for Candida esophagitis, actually is more effective if the level is 0.1 to 1. So in summary, probably a level of 4.5 to 1, or even higher than 1, would be what you would want measured with HPLC. There's also some data on itraconazole levels in toxicity, but this is now using the bioassay. This study used the bioassay to show that a level of 17.1 milligrams per liter was the best predictor of toxicity. So if we want to make recommendations based on the available evidence, a recommended range for the bioassay would be 5 to 17, and the recommended range for HPLC would be 1 to 3. And the equivalence, if you want to compare the two results, would be that the levels that you get with HPLC are roughly 1/5 of what you would get with the bioassay. And as I mentioned, the levels can be random, doesn't have to be trough level. So the, of course, the difficulty is what to do when the levels are too high or too low. The common scenario is that the levels are low. If the levels are above range, you would aim to reduce the dose by 100 to 200 milligrams per day. If the levels are below range, which is the most common situation, you, first of all, you have to check the compliance and interactions with other drugs, especially omeprazole. And if possible, you have to stop the proton pump inhibitor if the patient can tolerate that. And then you could increase the total daily dose by 1 to 200 milligrams. And if the patient has not been following the food requirements, you have to focus on that and ask them to take the medication with food or cola or another acidic drink. And of course, the other strategy is to switch from capsules to liquid. The equivalent dose, you can use half the dose of the solution, which should be equivalent to the dose of the capsules. So moving on to voriconazole. For voriconazole, there is even more evidence that we have to do TDM, as it is really unpredictable in terms of pharmacokinetics. You can really increase the dose by a small margin and you get really high levels, or conversely, you can get undetectable levels for a very long time, even on somebody on very high doses. The oral bioavailability is much better compared to itraconazole, more than 80%, but it's lower in children. The advice is to take it on an empty stomach, unlike itraconazole capsules. And again, in contrast to itraconazole, omeprazole can actually increase voriconazole levels to some extent, and this can be used by some clinicians. If the patient is on omeprazole, you can actually get better voriconazole levels. What's really important to know about voriconazole is it is the azole that is metabolized to a significant extent by the enzyme 2CYP19, which displays a huge variability in the human population. For example, up to 30% of Asians will have significantly low activity of this enzyme, and therefore they will not be able to metabolize voriconazole effectively, and this will result in actually toxic levels. So you have to be really aware of the epidemiology of this enzyme and the person you're treating. But this patient may actually develop significant toxicity from it. And on the other hand, children metabolize voriconazole faster through this enzyme, and therefore higher doses are recommended when we treat children with voriconazole. And it has been shown that better levels, better outcomes are achieved when you do TDM for voriconazole. And this study summarizes this. It showed that patients who were randomized to voriconazole TDM actually had fewer discontinuations of the voriconazole and also had better response to treatment. So voriconazole TDM is really known to be a recommendation when you treat somebody with voriconazole. There is also some data on toxicity. This study showed that a level of higher than 5.5 resulted in significantly more neurotoxicity. It's of course a small number of patients, but every patient with neurotoxicity had a level of higher than 5.5. And also what has been shown only in Japanese study was that liver abnormalities were also related to higher voriconazole levels in this study. So in summary, for voriconazole you need to measure a trough level and you aim for a level higher than 1 to maximize efficacy. And if you're treating a severe infection like brain aspergillosis, for example, it would be reasonable to aim for even higher levels, higher than 2. And to minimize toxicity, it would be best to try to keep the levels below 5.5. And you would probably be more proactive in repeating levels sooner than you would do with itraconazole. For example, when you start voriconazole, you would check a level within 5 days of starting, and then after every change or when you change from IV to oral formulation. So it's really tricky to make very generalized recommendations for voriconazole TDM monitoring. As I said, every patient would respond differently, so you need a close follow-up and expert opinion there. So if the level is above range, you would generally reduce by 50%. If the levels are very high, which could be observed, for example, in somebody who is a low metabolizer, you might even consider a different antifungal, which might be safer for the patient, or you might skip a dose and then start at a lower dose. If the levels are below range, again, you would check compliance and interactions, and you would increase by up to 50%. For example, if they're on the tablet formulation, you can increase by 50 to 100 milligrams daily, or twice daily. And again, if you're giving a very high dose, like for example, 350 milligrams twice a day orally, you might again consider a different antifungal if the patient is not achieving therapeutic levels. And again, to focus, to emphasize, it's very important to recheck the levels quite promptly after you make a change in the dose. So I'll briefly mention other antifungals which have been available more recently. Posaconazole suspension is a newer antifungal with activity also against zygomycosis. There are issues with absorption. It's better absorbed with a fatty meal, which may be difficult for some patients. So there are really problems with some therapeutic levels there. The recommendation is to aim for a level of 4.7 when you're giving this prophylaxis, and to a level of more than 1 if you're giving it for treatment. And a general recommendation also is to try to keep the level below 3.75. But not huge evidence behind this. We recently have posaconazole tablets which have bypassed this problem with the food requirement. So they can be taken on empty stomach and or with food, and they usually result in better levels. But you still need to do posaconazole TDM, as they approximately 10% of patients will still have subtherapeutic levels even on posaconazole tablets. And finally, the newest azole is isavuconazole, for which there are no formal recommendations regarding TDM, as it tends to achieve quite good therapeutic levels. So there's not much information yet about toxicity or efficacy in correlation with TDM. So in summary, itraconazole and voriconazole are the main azole antifungals for which we need to do TDM. There is some evidence for both of them, more evidence for voriconazole, and it's really important to keep an eye on itraconazole and voriconazole levels regularly in order to prevent toxicity and also to enhance efficacy of therapy. Thank you.